outside. And all them crazy murderers will never run from inside. You try to keep me down cause you see no joy. All them knows them from, so you call a man a boy. I ain't a toy, can't you see? Open up your eyes.
The thing that makes Judaism dangerous to everybody, to every race, to every nation, to every idea, is that we smash things that aren't true. We don't believe in the boundaries of nation state. We don't believe in the ideas of these individual gods that protect individual groups of people. These are all artificial constructions, and Judaism really teaches us how to see that. In a sense, our detractors have us right in that we are a corrosive force. We're breaking down the false gods of all nations and all people because they're not real.
And here we go, folks. It is Sunday, June the 25th, I think. 2023, I think. Yes. And you are listening to today's early morning edition of the Ugly Truth broadcast. Welcome to the program, folks. Hope you are all doing well, those of you with goodwill. As we say often on this program now, we don't wish our enemies goodwill. We don't want to congratulate them in what is their planned destruction of our lives, our peace, our prosperity. And make no mistake about it, folks, we do have an enemy that is hell-bent on our destruction, no pun intended, who have hated us thousands of years before we were ever born. This is something to keep in mind, is that we're not dealing with your average run-of-the-mill hatred here. This is something that goes back thousands of years. As I said, thousands of years before any of us were even born. Very quickly, folks, I want to... I had a few new listeners pop in, and they said, "Hey, what's the sound bites at the beginning of the program and the music? What is the what's the origin of that?" Well, the sound bite comes from this author of the Hebraic pedigree, known as Douglas Rushkoff, I believe his name is, and he's speaking at some book signing or some symposium or something like that. And he's basically just laying it all out, folks. He's saying, look, you know, this is what makes us dangerous, is that we are on a mission to, a hell-bent mission, by the way, to destroy everything. Everything that we don't agree with. And in this sense, our detractors, not just today, but throughout history, have us right in that we are a corrosive force. Okay? This is pretty important, folks. It's you know, these are not minor things. These are the kinds of things that, you know, any investigator looks into in determining, you know, the nature of a crime, the origin of a crime, something like that. And you know, it behooves us, if we have any vested interest in continuing our individual or collective lives here on planet Earth, that when we have an enemy that says, we are out to destroy you, brick by brick, bone by bone, I think it's in our interest to pay attention to that. This is a very important point we will get into later. Secondly, the song, folks, for those of you who are new to the program, that was the opening theme to what was an absolutely groundbreaking, history-making program that aired over a decade ago, and it was known as the Piper Report. And it featured our good friend Mike Piper, may he rest in eternal peace. That was the opening theme to his song every night when he did his weekly broadcast on RBN before being booted off the network by the owner of that network, John Stadtmiller. And you know, Mike and I worked very closely with each other for a decade. He was my closest colleague. We really were, you know, alter egos to each other. You know, we were constantly, constantly talking about this problem that we're dealing with, and so I consider my work, including this program here, at this humble little informational endeavor, as I refer to it, I consider that a continuation of what work that I used to do with Mike, because Mike was the one who taught me how to think. He taught me how to not fall into these mental traps that so many of our own people, unfortunately, fall into these days, willingly, I might add, folks. It's not that they, it's not like a hole has been dug for them and that they don't see it. It's that they allow themselves to be distracted by other things so that they don't see that they're about to fall into that hole. And we'll talk about that later on as the program commences. And by the way, folks, we have a very important loaded program today. Very important. It may go as long as an hour and a half or 2 hours, folks. I'm just going to warn you ahead of time because I did receive some correspondence. Actually, I've received two pieces of correspondence. One from someone who said, I really wish that your programs were longer and that you would do them more often. And then one from somebody that says, man, your programs are just too long. And we don't have the time to sit and listen to that. Well, that's unfortunate, folks, because the information that we're covering here on this program, unfortunately, I say this with no glee or gloat, unfortunately, you're not going to hear this, to the best of my knowledge, in too many other places. And this is important stuff, folks. Like I said, we have a group of people, a very powerful group of people, by the way. They're not, some group of doomsday cultists living on the top of some mountain in North Idaho or Montana. These are very powerful people, the most powerful people in the world, I would add. And so when they say that they are out to destroy us, I think that this is a conversation that warrants our very close consideration. Okay. So when I hear people saying that the program is too long, well, I'm sorry to hear that. This is the nature of, we're not going to get out of this thing accidentally. The only way we're going to get this razor blade off of our collective neck is if we pay very close attention to it and we stay focused and we don't allow ourselves to be distracted by silly things such as this thing that I received in my email yesterday of Roseanne Barr saying that 6 million Jews did not die in the Holocaust, and then somebody told me she said that if they did, they deserved it for all the trouble that they caused. Well, okay, I understand that for some people that's candy, that's ear candy for them, but it in the long run, it really doesn't do any, it doesn't move us forward with this business of survival, folks. Let's see. Now, having said that, today's program is, first of all, if I sound like I'm a little bit under the weather, I am. The last program that we did, I think I finally caught COVID, folks. During the whole business with COVID-19, yours truly did not. It was actually the healthiest period of my life. I hardly got sick at all. But I think it finally caught up with me. And as I was doing the program, I was coming down with this this terrible sickness, and it's just hanging on. It's been lingering for quite a long time, 2 weeks actually to be precise. So if I sound like I'm a little under the weather, I still am a little under the weather. I ask that you bear with me. Anyway, folks, like I said, we are loaded for bear today, as the saying goes, and with lots of important sound bites. Now, let me just bring you up to speed on things since we were last together. Donald Trump has been indicted again, this time at the federal level. He is being charged with violation of the Espionage Act. Now, just a little briefer on this, folks. The Espionage Act was passed right in the middle of World War I. And it was passed in order to stifle any opposition or dissent to that war, to World War I. And you had quite a few journalists and I think even a few politicians who found themselves sideways with Uncle Sam because they were speaking out against this war. They were warning that this is not in America's interest, that this is a war that has been started by interested parties in order to further some dark agenda on their part. And that's what the reason for the passage of this law was to stifle that. And I find that very interesting, given the fact that it's being applied to President Trump, that they are charging him with the same law that was originally written in order to keep the masses of asses, you know, stuck in place and supporting this war. And, you know, as we have covered on this program now, folks, for 7 years, since the very beginning of Trump's presidential campaign in 2016, this is the crux of the seek and destroy mission that has been waged against him. All of these other things that have provided the background scenery, you know, statements that he's made about immigrants, statements that he's made about, you know, his position on abortion, his position on gun control. All of this stuff was just background scenery to what was the real crux, the real deal, the real reason why these people were out to destroy him is because he was absolutely devoted, dedicated, whatever word we want to use, to preventing another needless war. And, you know, folks, on that note, we're going to jump into our first soundbite of the day. And it came as quite a shock and a welcome surprise to me, folks, because actually we're just going to hear the first part of this, but we're going to use this to launch today's discussion. So let's just sit down here for a moment and listen.
Whatever else you say about him, Trump is the one guy with an actual shot at becoming president who dissents from Washington's long-standing pointless war agenda. And for that one fact, they're trying to take Trump out before you can vote for him. And that should upset you more than anything that's happened in American politics in your lifetime. Even if you don't plan to vote for Donald Trump, even if you would die before voting for Donald Trump, which is your right, and a lot of good people feel that way, even still, the destruction of our democracy, which is the right of voters to support any candidate they want, even candidates who don't want war with Russia, the destruction of that should keep you up at night. Yes, Donald Trump is a flawed man, but his sins are minor compared to those of his persecutors. In this life, we don't get to choose our martyrs. We can only choose our principles, and America's are at stake.
Okay, folks, so for those of you who don't recognize the voice, that is Tucker Carlson. And he, an extremely popular, very influential commentator. I like Tucker, folks. Out of all the quote-unquote mainstream commentators out there, he's the one who throws his darts closest to the bullseye. You know, and he will use some of these dreaded terms like neocon And also, folks, it's very important to keep in mind, Tucker Carlson is very close with Donald Trump. Now, I can't prove it, but I would be willing to bet my left earlobe that Tucker and Trump talk on a regular basis. If not directly, then through their intermediaries. In fact, I would be very surprised if Trump does not pick Carlson as his running mate in next year's election. Now, the reason I threw that soundbite into the discussion, folks, is because it is going to, it's the basis upon which we're going to do this, probably a very long program, folks. Yeah, it looks like it's probably going to be close to 2 hours. But it's a very important 2 hours, and I think that it's a well-spent 2 hours for those of us who really want to know what's going on, okay, who, you know, they who understand the existential threat that we all face, and who, you know, I mean, look, this is why it's called the ugly truth, folks. Sometimes ugly means that you've got to really hunker down and you've got to focus. You have to laser focus on things, because if you don't, you're going to miss things. Now, in this soundbite featuring Tucker Carlson, it's actually the end of a monologue that he did about a week or so ago following Trump's arrest and being charged with the Espionage Act. And he lays it all out there, folks, is that what is really going on here is that they're out to destroy Trump because he is standing in way of these wars. Now, when we talk about these wars, these never-ending wars, okay, what we have to keep in mind, folks, is that these never-ending wars had a very specific starting point, okay? We're not talking about Vietnam. We're not talking about Korea. What we're really talking about here is the Middle East. Hold on, I have to fix something on my computer here, folks. Okay. What we're really talking about is the Middle East, and specifically with the Israeli-engineered terrorist attacks taking place on the morning of 9/11. Okay, that was the beginning of these endless wars that Trump is talking about. Now, in this monologue that Tucker Carlson put together, and which we will be playing at the end of the program, folks, we're going to end today's program in a kind of a different way than we have in the past. There's not going to be the closing music that we usually use. It's just going to be Tucker Carlson, and I'm going to play this as a tribute to the very, very small handful of people that I've known over the past 7 years who have stuck by this humble little informational endeavor and who did not allow their focus to stray. You know, they didn't get hung up on these other things that so many other quote-unquote truthers got hung up on, whether it was immigration, whether it's the Second Amendment, abortion, even though I consider that to be, you know, at the very top of the list, but nevertheless, who made sure to stay focused on what the real crux of this issue was, which was Trump's opposition to any new wars. Now, as I said, we will be playing that at the end of the program, and those of you who think that the program is too long and you don't want to listen to it, well, fine, don't listen to it. Anyway, folks, last program, I talked about, we played on the last program, a soundbite featuring an Israeli journalist, Barak Ravid, that, in my opinion, folks, this interview that he did discussing the things that he was discussing, this is the most important story of our lifetime. Now, Barak Ravid is a very well-known, very well-respected left-of-center journalist in Israel. And he has written this book entitled Trump's Peace. And I happen to get a copy of it courtesy of one of my very few alter egos who does a lot of research for me and helps fill in a lot of the blanks, as Mike Piper and I used to do for each other. Sent me the book, and in the book, folks, Ravid, through using Trump's own words, because he interviewed Trump personally twice, he lays out the case that everything that we were told, and when I say we, I mean we as in between 7 and 8 billion people around the world, who were led to believe during the 4 years of Trump's presidency that he and Benjamin Netanyahu were joined at the hip, they were the best of buddies, and Ravid reveals that this was not the case at all, that Trump and Netanyahu were actually, we get some horrible noise coming through my, there we go, sorry folks, were actually at each other's throats, even though this news didn't really make its way into the mainstream. Anyway, Ravid devotes the first fourth of his book to discussing what was going on behind the scenes between Trump and Netanyahu, and particularly over Trump's plans for bringing a lasting peace deal in the Middle East, of ending these never-ending wars. And there was one particular sentence, short paragraph, whatever we want to call it, folks, in the book, where after Ravid has laid out all of the details that were provided to him by Trump, by Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and by other people who were working at very high levels in the Trump administration working on this situation in the Middle East, he ends this by saying something of utmost importance. He said, by March of 2020, COVID-19 arrived, and with that, Israel, the Palestinians, and any peace deals that Trump was planning to make were old news. Now, it has been our position, folks, here since the arrival of COVID-19, that this was indeed a lab-engineered virus. And unlike the quote-unquote conventional wisdom out there that unfortunately gets way too much airplay, in my opinion, I don't believe that it originated in the Wuhan lab in China. It may have been released from Wuhan, but I don't think that it originated there. Nor do I believe that it originated at Fort Detrick, Maryland, which is where the U.S. Army maintains a bioweapons lab. I think that it originated at the IIBR, which is the Israeli Institute for Biological Research. Okay. Now, we know they're making some really nasty stuff at the IIBR, and we know this because of the testimony of one Viktor Ostrovsky, a former Mossad agent. And by the way, folks, when we talk about the Mossad, we're talking about, at any given moment, only 35 agents at any given moment. Now, this is very important because when you have somebody, a former Mossad agent, making the kinds of claims that Ostrovsky did in his two books, which I highly recommend that all of you read. And yes, folks, it will take a long time to read them, okay? Just like Ravid's book. It's like 400 pages long, but it is extremely well written. It's absolutely fascinating. You can't put it down once you start reading it. As Ostrovsky writes in his books, he talks about what they were doing at the Israeli Institute for Biological Research, and he says that what they were doing day and night is that they were creating doomsday machines. Doomsday, okay? Viruses that could wipe out the entire world, viruses that can be used for political purposes. And interestingly enough, folks, you know, during the presidency of John F. Kennedy, who was just as devoted to preventing any wars in the Middle East and preventing Israel from acquiring the nuclear weapons that she attained, there was also a CIA and National Security Agency mission to keep an eye on what was going on at the Israeli Institute for Biological Research. And the project name for this, where they had satellites flying overhead and taking pictures and keeping an eye on things, was codenamed Corona. Yeah, folks, Corona. That was the name of the program. And, you know, just I'm sure by pure coincidence, of course, before it became known as COVID-19, it was known as the coronavirus. Now, on today's program, what we're going to be talking about relative to Trump's being indicted again on 37 felonies related to his retention of these documents is a section of Ravid's book. Again, folks, based upon conversations that Ravid had with Trump himself, there I picked up an interview that Ravid did on an Israeli television news program. And I want you to pay close attention to this, folks, because not only does this function as the foundation for the rest of today's discussion, but what you're hearing here, you're seeing the mechanism by which our lives have been taken apart by this giant Judaic wrecking ball, beginning with COVID-19. So let's just take a listen here.
Donald Trump is very angry at Israel in the context of Iran's Qasem Soleimani's assassination, but he wouldn't say why. This is part of an interview with Israeli journalist Barak Ravid, who has just published his book, Trump's Peace, focusing on the Abraham Accords. Good evening, Barak.
Hi, Yaakov.
First, you know what? Let's take a listen. What did Trump tell you about Soleimani's assassination? Take a listen. All right, we have it. One second and we'll have it.
I was very disappointed in Israel having to do with that event.
What do you mean?
I can't mention that now, but I was not happy with Israel.
during the killing of Suleiman?
They didn't. Israel did not do the right thing. People will be hearing about that at the right time.
All right. So, Barak, any clue as to what he meant?
Yes. You know, when I had this interview with former President Trump, it was our second interview. It was in a phone call in July. And I was really surprised that he said that, because I had no clue that there was any problem around the killing of Soleimani, because I think, and I'm sure you would agree, that in real time, it looked like the height of the Israeli-U.S. cooperation against Iran. But apparently, behind the scenes, in places that the general public and us journalists did not see, there was quite a big crisis. And at the beginning, when I started asking former Trump's staffers about this, I got the same answer, no comment, because I got the sense that there was something that they felt really uneasy about this event. And eventually I managed to find out what happened, at least in Trump's view. Apparently, Israel was involved in the killing of Soleimani, obviously, and Israeli officials confirmed that they contributed in intelligence on the whereabouts of Soleimani. But apparently Trump wanted Israel to have much more active role, and that basically, if I can sum it up, that Israel will kill Soleimani, especially after there was this intelligence that allegedly said that Soleimani was planning attacks against American targets in the region. And at least what Trump understood at the time was that Netanyahu didn't want to do it and didn't want to that Israel would kill Soleimani. And Trump got upset, and he told his aides that Netanyahu was ready to fight Iran until the last American soldier, which is quite a statement by the U.S. president. And since that moment, I think that incident contributed a lot to the fallout between those two leaders in the last year of Trump in the Oval Office.
Okay, folks, so that was, again, that was Barak Ravid, the Israeli journalist who authored the book Trump's Peace, based upon interviews that he did with Trump and with all of the high-level people that were involved in the Trump administration with trying to put this, to put the kibosh, as our non-Gentile, those of the non-Gentile persuasion like to call it, to put the kibosh on war in the Middle East, that Israel needs to take place in order to achieve her long-range political and religious goals of creating greater Israel. Now, let's just talk, let's just take this apart a piece at a time of what Ravid says here. Let's see. First of all, he mentions that he was very surprised to hear that Trump was angry with Israel over this issue of Soleimani, according to Ravid, who follows these things very closely, folks. He said, you know, it appeared that this was at the height of the Israeli-American cooperation on things, but this wasn't the case behind the scenes at all. Trump himself says, I can't talk about this right now, but people are going to be hearing about this at the right time. Now, keep that in mind, folks. Put that little quotation there. Squirrel that away in the back of your brain here as we continue on with this program. He says, people will be hearing about this at the right time. Ravid talks about the staffers and the other people working in the Trump administration when he asked them about Soleimani, and how everybody got really quiet, very uneasy, very uncomfortable. They would say no comment, and he couldn't get anything out of them. Now, Trump says, as you heard in the interview, Trump says that he was angry that Israel didn't kill Soleimani, that Netanyahu didn't want to. Well, folks, I don't believe that this was the case at all. I don't think that Trump wanted to kill Soleimani at all, because if you recall, when Trump decided to pull the United States out of this very bad deal that Obama had set up with Iran, known as the JCPOA, the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, which, by the way, folks, I opposed as well. And not because of the fact that the Iranians didn't deserve to enrich their uranium, or because they didn't deserve to have all of the money that had been seized by the U.S. Treasury, but rather because I saw that deal as a trap, okay, that this was going to be the Trojan horse that America and its Zionist lobby was going to use in order to penetrate Iran and to rot her out from within. When Trump got rid of the deal, he said, we're going to make an even better deal. Okay, so he didn't just, you know, get rid of the deal and then that was it. Everybody thought, oh, this is it. Look, he's going to launch this war against Iran now. No, folks, that's not what it was at all. Trump didn't want any wars against anyone. He understood how disastrous these wars have been, and he made it his main objective, part of his whole MAGA objective, was to get the United States out of the Middle East and to bring an end to these wars before they destroy everything. So I don't believe for a moment that Trump wanted to kill Soleimani. In fact, my personal theory, folks, is that Trump was probably carrying on backroom, back deal communications with Soleimani in order to set the stage for what he was planning to do with Iran. Now, those of you who have followed the website and who have followed this program know that one of my theories, I have many, yes, I know, folks, one of my theories is that one of the reasons that Israel was absolutely intent upon destroying Trump's presidency wasn't just that he was planning to bring a peace deal to the Middle East, which Israel absolutely cannot have. I mean, peace in the Middle East, as far as Israel is concerned, is like holy water on a vampire, okay? Can't have it. Not only that, but Trump, in my opinion, my theory, folks, is that he also plans to take away Israel's nuclear weapons, okay? We have posted and reposted many, many times, as well as discussing on this program, this interview that Trump gave about 40 years ago, where he said very, very plainly, very, very clearly, that the biggest problem that the world faces right now is the threat of nuclear war. And since this war began in between Russia and Ukraine, he has really ramped up and amped up his discussion of that, talking about nuclear war. Trump is very, very against nuclear weapons by being owned by anyone, including Israel. Now, if Trump indeed was meeting with Soleimani behind the scenes through his intermediaries and saying, listen, we're going to work this deal out, okay? We're going to end your isolation. We're going to get a leash around the neck and a muzzle around the mouth of this rabid dog to the west of you, known as the Jewish state. We're not going to allow Israel to continue to kill your scientists and to carry on these terrorist assassinations in Iran, as Israel has been doing now for many years. And in return for that, we're going to take away Israel's nuclear weapons. Because this has been, besides the war of 1967, folks, that created this Palestinian problem with all of the refugees, okay, and the occupied territories, it has also been Israel's acquisition and the threat of using nuclear weapons that has destabilized the region, okay? So if Trump is negotiating with Soleimani behind the scenes, and Netanyahu gets word of this, what do you think Netanyahu is going to do? If he sees that Trump is going to neutralize the buildup to war against Iran in the fashion that that Israel wants to see take place, and he's doing this through the person of Soleimani, what do you think Israel's going to do? Naturally, they are going to kill Soleimani. Now, those of you who follow this program know that I have also theorized that possibly Soleimani was not killed. And my basis for this, and I didn't even theorize it, folks, I just asked it as a question, as a what if, Okay, what if Soleimani really wasn't killed? My reason for asking this as a question is, number one, because Trump did not want to do this. Number two, because the only proof that we've seen in terms of open source information has been this picture of this hand with this ring on it. Now, if you go back and if you look at the pictures of Soleimani that that they have on file, you will see this ring. And if you hone in on the ring, folks, and believe me, folks, I'm not doing the kind of crap, pardon my French here, that you heard from the likes of Jim Fetzer and these other people in the aftermath of Sandy Hook, where they said, you know, this was just impossible that this shooting took place. It had to have been a hoax. And they, you know, they pull in all this kind of forensic evidence nonsense to prove that Adam Lanza, he wasn't tall enough. He didn't have enough meat on his bones. There's no way he could, you know, accurately kill 26 people who were huddled in a corner from, you know, a mere 10 feet away. Okay, that's not what I'm doing here when I'm talking about the infamous ring that General Soleimani always wore. Okay, it is very, very clear. In fact, it is absolutely undeniable that if you go back and you look at the ring that has been always associated with Soleimani, and then you look at the picture of this hand with the ring on it, that the rings are two completely different rings. Completely different. Now, folks, I happen to, because of the work that I've done over the years, I happen to have some very, important close connections in Iran. People who knew General Soleimani personally knew him on a first name basis. And I have asked several of those people who knew him very closely on a first name basis, do you know if he had any other rings? And the answer that I got from the handful of people that I asked and who knew General Soleimani very well said, not that we know of. Okay, so this is the basis upon which that I asked the question as to whether or not Soleimani was really killed, or rather, did Trump and his people snatch him? Snatch him as part of this plan that Trump had to bring this peace deal with Iran. Because if you're going to bring a peace deal with Iran, a better deal, as Trump described it, the one thing that you don't do is kill the one man who is viewed in Iran the way that we Americans view George Washington. Okay, if there's a better way to destroy any peace deals you have with Iran, killing Soleimani, you can't find a better one. And this is the reason why I don't believe for a moment that Trump planned to do that. Now, so those of you out there listening to this are saying, well, no, we heard Trump. He gave a press conference. He announced that Soleimani was dead and was taking credit for it. Well, folks, what could he do? Was he in the position? Think about all the political turmoil that was going on at the time, how he had daggers coming at him, daggers and arrows and spears coming at him from a 360-degree arc. Could he come on, give a press conference and say, I didn't order the killing of General Soleimani. I was completely against this. This was done without my permission, without my authorization. If he had done something like that, then the howling that would have taken place would have been, look at this guy. He's supposed to be, he's commander-in-chief of the armed forces, and he doesn't have control over his own military. You know, because he doesn't have control over his own military, the people under him almost started World War III. We got to get him out of there. We got to get somebody in there who has control over the trigger. That's what would have happened. So Trump was basically backed into this corner where he had to own this thing. Okay. But anybody who can do the very simple math on this can see this was not what Trump wanted. Now, Trump's interview with Ravid, where he said Israel didn't do the right thing, and Ravid saying that that according to Trump, according to the information that Trump gave him, that Israel wanted, or that Trump wanted Israel to kill Soleimani, but that Benjamin Netanyahu didn't want to. All right, now folks, what's wrong with this picture? Okay, the notion that Benjamin Netanyahu didn't want to kill Soleimani. Everything is wrong with that picture, because we know that if there's any human being, semi-humanoid human being on the planet, who would be willing to pull the trigger and kill Soleimani, it's Benjamin Netanyahu. Okay, he craves a war with Iran. Okay, I mean, look at all of the scientists in Iran that have been assassinated by Israel. Why wouldn't he want to kill Soleimani? Of course he would want to kill Soleimani. Of course he would be willing to do it. So I think that Trump's statement in this effect is that he is playing Ravid. He's playing with this, which Trump is a master at doing. He is a master at throwing words and statements out there in order to get everybody looking at A, when the truth actually resides all the way over at the other side of the spectrum. Okay. What we know for sure is that Trump said everybody will be hearing about this at a later time. Okay. And finally, what Trump told Ravid is that Netanyahu wants to see a war with Iran down to the last American soldier. So here is what I think happened. I think that Trump was negotiating with General Soleimani. And by the way, folks, thanks to my my alter ego who does a lot of research for me. You know, Soleimani wasn't just an Iranian figure, okay? He was respected across the Middle East everywhere, whether they were Sunni Arabs, whether they were Shia, okay? He has been described by people who follow the politics of the region as the Kissinger of the Middle East, Kissinger of the Islamic world. Now, you'll remember back during the time of Henry Kissinger, and I'm not singing his praises at all, folks, I believe that Kissinger was the one who was primarily responsible for destroying the presidency of Richard Nixon, and again, over the same issue of Nixon's plans for bringing peace to the Middle East, especially peace between Israel and the Palestinians. Nevertheless, Kissinger, you know, with his shuttle diplomacy and where he could go to any country, okay, he could go to any country and he could work his charm in furthering whatever, you know, whatever plans, whatever agenda was on the table at that time. This is how Soleimani was described by people in the know. He was the Kissinger of the Middle East. He was the Kissinger of the Islamic world. So if there was one person that Trump would want to use as a go-between in helping to bring about this ultimate deal, this deal of the century, that would finally once and for all solve the situation with the Palestinians, it would create fixed, internationally recognized borders, which Israel absolutely rejects, because to Israel, the entire Middle East belongs to her, according to the dictates of her Judaism, everything from the Nile to the Euphrates. If there was one person who could bring all of that together, it was Qasem Soleimani. Okay. So this business of Trump telling Ravid that that Netanyahu was unwilling to kill Soleimani, I don't believe that that's true, folks. And if Soleimani is dead, I believe that it was Israel, whether through her people there directly, or whether it was Israel and Netanyahu using their tentacled influence within the U.S. military, okay, to do it, because we know that exists. Okay, we're going to hear about that here in just a few moments. That Netanyahu did this in order to destroy Trump's deal, in order to destroy Trump's plans for bringing a better deal for the Iranians, and of yanking the fuse out of this stick of dynamite, which is burning down to World War III. Now, let's bring this thing up to the present day, folks. Hold on, I'm going to check time frame here. We are already at 43 minutes. Okay. Okay. Maybe we will keep it at just a little over an hour. We'll find out. So Trump has been indicted now And he's being charged with holding on to these classified documents. And again, folks, as I have pointed out on previous programs, no matter where you go, it is always the wrong conversation. If you listen to nitwits like Glenn Beck and Sean Hannity, they'll say all day long, well, Trump has the authority to declassify documents. And then if you listen to these nitwits on the left, they say, no, he doesn't have the authority to classify documents. That's not the conversation that we should be having, folks. The conversation that we should be having is what is on those documents. Now, you'll recall, going all the way back to 2016, when Trump was running for president, that he talked about the fact that when he became president, he was going to start spilling the beans, and he was going to let the cat out of the bag with regards to many, many unanswered questions that have plagued America, such as who really killed John F. Kennedy? What really happened on 9/11? Okay. Trump has said that he is going to reveal these things to the American people. And as president, he has the authority to do that, folks. As soon as he declassifies a document, that means that document is free for viewing by anybody. Okay. So, and just recently, folks, before the raid on his home by the armed FBI agents coming up a year, it'll be a year here in August, he made a statement just about a week or so before that, that the American people were not told the truth about 9/11, and that he believed that the documents surrounding that event, that act of war, should be made public. And then all of a sudden now we see the FBI sending armed agents into his home looking for documents. Now, again, bringing this thing forward to today, he's just been indicted, 37 felonies related to retention of documents. And, folks, if you have been paying attention to the news, stories since these charges were brought against him by the special prosecutor, quote unquote, Jack Smith. That's how Trump refers to it, quote unquote. It says, wonder what his real name is. Again, folks, he is speaking to us in a coded way to say that there's more to this Jack Smith person than what we're being told. Anyway, if you've been paying attention, folks, to the news stories, the talk about documents now has changed to document. One document in particular. And this document deals with Iran and on a possible military strike on Iran. Now, they don't say what country was planning to do it. But the fact that the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mark Milley, has been brought into this goes back to what I was saying earlier about Iran using her tentacled interests in America within the political system, within Congress, and within the Pentagon to see certain things take place. Now, I'm going to be playing here a series of newscasts, folks, and so let's just sit back here and give them all a listen. Hold on, folks. Having a little bit of technical problem here. Come on. All right, here we go.
Sources tell CNN that U.S. prosecutors subpoenaed former President Donald Trump for records related to a classified document about Iran. Now, the document was discussed in an audio recording of the former president. Those sources also say that Trump's attorneys have been unable to produce the document itself. CNN's Caitlin Polance has our details.
Donald Trump's attorneys have not been able to produce the exact document in the last 2 months to the Justice Department that Donald Trump apparently spoke about, waved around, and had in his possession after the presidency at his golf club in New Jersey in a meeting where he was talking to aides and other people without classified security clearances. Now, this is a really the next step of a story that comes out of our reporting around around this audio tape of Donald Trump at that meeting in July of 2021 at his Bedminster Golf Club. And that tape was revealed to be in the possession of the Justice Department to Donald Trump's lawyers just 2 months ago in March when a witness went into the grand jury and was asked about it. And shortly after that witness exited the grand jury, Donald Trump's team got a subpoena demanding they turn over that document or any documents they had in their possession related to General Mark Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, whom Donald Trump was very unhappy with related to Iran and Milley's opposition to having a military strike against that country during the Trump presidency. We also know that they were asking about Iran itself, and the Justice Department wanted back any classified records or any other records that Donald Trump and his team might have related to Iran, including maps or invasion plans. And so the Trump legal team goes and looks for documents such as these, turns over what they find in just recent weeks to the Justice Department as part of this criminal investigation, but can't locate that document itself. Now, there could be a couple different explanations for this. It is plausible that the Justice Department already has this document in its possession and wants to make sure that there are no other copies or notes or any other information related to it still in Trump's possession and they want it back. But it's also possible that the Justice Department doesn't have the document and neither can Trump's team locate it at this time. So another wrinkle in this new reporting about an apparently crucial moment factoring into the criminal case as the special counsel's office at the Justice Department looks at the possibility of charging Donald Trump with a crime related to mishandling of classified records and obstruction of justice. Caitlin Polance, CNN, Washington.
Okay, folks, so that was the CNN report prior to Trump being indicted. And you can hear... Within the context of how this is being presented, the panic, the absolute panic that exists in Washington within the Justice Department over this particular document dealing with war with Iran. Now, the way that they have painted this, folks, is that Trump wanted this war with Iran and Milley didn't, and But again, folks, we know that that's nothing but BS. Trump doesn't want war. That's the reason he was driven out of office, is because he opposes these wars in the Middle East that Israel is demanding get started. This is a red herring that is being thrown out. You know that Milley didn't want this war. The Pentagon didn't want this war. I guarantee you, folks, that this document that Trump got his hands on probably detailed all sorts of dirty business that was going to take place. It's not just maps, it's not just an invasion of Iran, but the necessary groundwork that has to be done, known as operational preparation of the environment in intelligence circles, meaning that there has to be some type of provocation. Okay, you go back and you look at the policy papers that were written prior to the Israeli engineered terrorist attacks on 9/11, and they talked about, you know, in particular this one think tank project for the New American Century, you know, where they talk about that there needs to be this catalyzing event, and they specifically described it as a new Pearl Harbor in order to usher in this period of never-ending wars that will, you know, bring the United States up, as an unchallenged world power, and giving Israel a free hand to do what she needs to do in the Middle East. I guarantee you, folks, that this paper, this document that Trump got hold of, probably didn't make its way to his desk by Milley. It was probably somebody in the Pentagon who was privy to these discussions, who saw this document, and who gave it to Trump. And it is the one document that is the focus of this frantic search to get this piece of paper out of Trump's hands. And remember, folks, what did Trump say in the interview with Ravid when he was talking about Israel not doing the right thing with regards to Soleimani? He said, "I'll have more to say on that at the appropriate time." All right, folks, time for another soundbite here. Let's see. Hold on just a second. Yeah, here we go.
Where was this meeting? What was it about?
This meeting was back in the summer of 2021 at Trump's Bedminster Golf Club. And among the people in attendance were several Trump aides and two people working on an autobiography of Mark Meadows. Now, Mark Meadows was not in attendance at this meeting, but during this time, Trump was in the habit of having his aides record any conversations with journalists, writers, or people working on books. Now, sources tell us that on this tape, Trump says that he has a classified Pentagon document describing a possible attack on Iran. We're also told that you can hear a paper rustling. It appears that he might be waving something around, though it's unclear if he's waving this document that he's referring to or if he's waving something else. Now, perhaps more importantly for investigators, on this recording, you can hear Trump suggest that he would like to share this information with the people he's speaking with, but he acknowledges that there are limits to his power to declassify post-presidency. And as one source told me, that is a real problem.
Okay, folks, two things. First of all, remember this recording, okay, that was the source of the Jack Smith, the special prosecutor Jack Smith, issuing this subpoena, wanting this particular document. This recording is taking place where, folks? At Trump's golf course in New Jersey, the very same locale where he said a year ago, just prior to the FBI raid on his home in Mar-a-Lago, that documents related to 9/11, that the American people have never been told the truth about 9/11, and that those documents should be made public. Very same place as golf course. Okay, that's number one. Number two, folks, Trump made that recording. Okay, as the reporter says, that he was in the habit of having his staffers record all of these meetings that he had. He recorded that and probably released it. Okay, this is his way of letting the powers that be, going all the way up to Benjamin Netanyahu, letting them know what he intends to do. Okay, this is why there is this frantic search to get hold of this document before he can put it in front of the face, in front of the eyes, not just of the American people, folks, but the entire world, okay? And she says, you know, that Trump says in the video that he would like to share this information, but that he can't do this at this particular time. Let's see, there was something else. Sorry, folks, I'm having one of my senior moments here. I'm sure it'll come back to me, hopefully. Okay. Okay, so next soundbite, folks. I know I'm inundating you with soundbites here, but it's very important in helping to flesh out this program, flesh out the thesis of this program. So let's just give this a listen here.
Exclusive report on a federal criminal investigation into former President Donald Trump. Attorneys for the former president unable now to locate a classified document that he referenced on an audio tape now in possession of prosecutors. CNN's Caitlin Collins is on the team that broke this story. She's joining us now with the latest. Caitlin, take us through what we know.
So what happened here is Mario Martin, this press aide to former President Trump, who was in the White House and now has followed him to Mar-a-Lago, went and testified, as many people who are in that orbit these days have gone, before Jack Smith's investigators. And she was in there in mid-March, and we're told it was very shortly after she left that grand jury testimony, the prosecutors sent a subpoena to the former president saying that they wanted any and all documents related to Iran and General Mark Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff that Trump is referencing on that audio recording that we reported on Wednesday. And basically what I was told that they were specifically seeking was the document that Trump is referencing on that tape. Prosecutors made clear to Trump's legal team that they wanted that document. Trump's team, though, was unable to find it. They did produce some materials, we were told, in response to this subpoena that they got. They could not find that document, though, that is at the heart of what Trump was referencing. So it's raised a lot of questions of where that document is. I asked Trump's attorney the other day if it had been sent back to the National Archives, what happened to it. He declined to answer. He also didn't say whether or not Trump had declassified it, as an argument that they've been making. So this has just raised questions about this episode, which we know Jack Smith, the special counsel, is very focused on. I mean, they even brought General Mark Milley in to talk to him about this episode because Trump was referencing him when he was on that audio recording discussing classified information.
Okay, folks, so as I said earlier, you know, the special prosecutor, Jack Smith, he issues this subpoena, like within minutes of testimony, that Trump has this particular document, President Trump has this particular document related to a possible attack on Iran. As soon as they find out that he's got that, they say, okay, we got to get that thing, and we want it right now. Now, Trump's lawyers are saying, well, we can't find it. We can't find it. And so, obviously, folks, what this means is that Trump is holding on to this document, and he is going to release it when he thinks that the time is right. Now, Milley was interviewed, General Milley. And you can see in the interview, folks, that he is very, very uncomfortable with the questions that he's being asked. And he keeps saying, no comment, no comment, no comment. He says, it's not proper for me to say anything in an ongoing investigation. He knows, he and everybody at the top, going all the way up, again, folks, all the way up to Benjamin Netanyahu. They know that Trump... okay, he is about to go nuclear with information that could bring the whole house of cards crumbling down. Okay, who knows what they were planning to do? Was it going to be a dirty nuke that was going to be used in America and it was going to be blamed on Iran? Is this the 9/11 style act of war that they were going to initiate in order to get this war against Iran started? Was it going to be a an assassination of the president himself, meaning Trump? Okay, because in the aftermath of Soleimani's assassination, folks, the big news was how the Iranian government had issued a death warrant for Donald Trump. And we have to be very concerned about this, okay, because... how do you kill two birds with one stone? Meaning you get rid of somebody who's about to spill the beans on information that the American people don't know. And if they do know it, will completely upend the existing situation. You kill the messenger, and at the same time you get your war started if the assassin turns out to be, surprise, surprise, an Iranian. Tied to the Revolutionary Guards or somebody like that, okay. And so that, folks, I think is exactly what this is all about. They know that Trump has been backed into a corner. Look, folks, he's not going to go to jail. He's not going to allow his children to go to jail. And if he has to, and he's going to prevent this war from getting started. And if that means that he has to reveal information that could be so damaging that it would cause the economic and the political collapse of the United States, to have everything descend into complete chaos and anarchy and civil war, you know, Trump is what's known as a transactional individual, meaning he looks at profit and loss. Okay, like for example, if you see a piece of real estate and it's got a building on it, okay, and you say I'd like to develop this piece of real estate, you know, as Trump did because he was a real estate developer, and it's got this old building on it. So what you'll do is you'll do a study and you'll find out what kind of condition that building is in, okay, and if it is so old and decrepit, it has such structural problems in it that it would cost more to fix those problems, it would cost more than it would be to build a brand new building, then obviously the thing to do is to just tear the building down. Okay, tear it down and start over from scratch. And this is exactly, I believe, this is the mindset that is driving Trump's, I mean, this is, folks, this is his Samson option, okay? He's going to bring the system down around him because There's no other possibility of surviving this thing other than to do that. Let's see. There was one. Do I have any more sound bites? Just the one with Tucker Carlson. Okay. So, folks, to recap things. Okay. First and foremost, this is the discussion that we should all be having. Okay. We shouldn't be sending out videos or audios of Roseanne Barr saying that the Holocaust never happened, and if it did, they got what they deserved. Okay. We shouldn't be talking about, you know, the latest death of some white person at the hands of an illegal immigrant. As terrible as it is, folks, it's a terrible thing. I know illegal immigration is a problem, but it is just a subset of the more serious problem that we're facing here, which is the planned destruction and political disintegration of our country here, and really the entire world. Okay. This is the center of the bullseye right now. There, and as Tucker Carlson said in that interview, in that monologue, sorry, that I played at the beginning of the program, he is the one man who stands the chance of winning the presidency, who also is standing in the way of seeing the United States destroyed. Okay. This is the conversation that we should be having. We shouldn't be sending out silly things dealing with anything else than this. Okay. Now, let's see. I had a million things that I wanted to add to this, but they have all flown the coop, as the saying goes, folks. I'm sure I'll remember them later and then hopefully incorporate them into the next program. But again, folks, you know, this is not an academic exercise on our part here. Okay, we don't dabble in this because it's a nice distraction. Yes, it is very interesting. It's fascinating. But we also are very transactional in our reasons for doing what we're doing. Okay, we want to get this razor blade off of our throats. And the only way to do this is by having a rational, productive discussion of important things with those around us. Now, I've talked about this on previous programs. All of us have family members. All of us have friends. All of us have coworkers. Okay? And right now, people want to know why their world is falling apart. They want to know why they can't pay their bills. They want to know why the country's just descending into violence and just every species of insanity and chaos imaginable, okay? And so we have to view ourselves, you know, again, this is not an academic exercise. We are foot soldiers here trying to yank the detonator out of this bomb before they push down on the, I can't remember what the thing is called, but the thing that causes it to blow up. Okay. And so we need to use our time well, folks. Okay. We don't have the luxury of millions of shots in our weapon, whatever weapon it is we're using. You know, just like, during the American Revolution, during the Battle of Bunker Hill, the commander of the American militia, you know, Israel Putnam was his name. And he said, you know, don't shoot until you see the whites of their eyes, meaning the British as they were coming up the hill, because they were running out of ammunition and they didn't have the luxury of wasting what precious time and resources that they had. They had to make every shot count. So I am exhorting all of you out there listening to this program, okay, talk to your family members, talk to your friends. Tell them that this witch hunt against Trump is not just about destroying him because he's going to build a wall along the border between the United States and Mexico, and he's going to raise tariffs against China, and he's going to do this and he's going to do that. No, folks, it's about preventing World War III, which is a lot closer than any of us would like to imagine, a lot closer. So, folks, I said at the beginning of the program that we're going to end today's program by, sorry, folks, I'm moving some stuff around here, by playing this monologue featuring Tucker Carlson, okay? And I'm doing this as a, well, yes, folks, to some degree, It is me saying, I told you so. I guess there's a little bit of glee and a little bit of gloat in this, because for 7 years, yours truly, almost singularly, folks, unfortunately, I do say that with no glee and no gloat, singularly trying to have this conversation with the rest of the quote unquote movement, that this drive to destroy Trump was because of his plans for bringing an end to these wars in the Middle East, okay, bringing an end to these wars for Israel. And what yours truly received was just a tsunami of utter stupidity on the part of a whole gaggle of people who were only as smart as they imagined themselves being by at half at best. No. Trump's going to give Netanyahu his war. He's in Netanyahu's back pocket. They're the best of friends. Netanyahu put Trump in office. He's going to get a war started with Iran. He's going to get this. He's going to do that. No, folks, as we know now, definitively, from Trump's own words, as revealed in Barak Ravid's book, which all of you should get hold of immediately, this was not the case at all. Well, anyway, folks, in this monologue featuring Tucker Carlson, he lays it all out. He says that the reason that they are going to get Trump, that they are out to destroy him, is because he is out to prevent World War III. And folks, just a little pat on the back to those of us here at this humble little informational endeavor. Tucker Carlson actually uses, he isolates the moment in which the seek and destroy mission against Trump began, with when he said the unspeakable. He spoke those unspeakable words at the presidential debates in South Carolina, where he talks about the destruction of Iraq and about the fact that the powers that be lied about the weapons of mass destruction. And folks, we used that soundbite for years on this program and on the website itself to say that if you wanted to find the moment at which Judea Incorporated signed Donald Trump's political and, if they get their way, literal death warrant, it was this statement that he made when he was at the debates. So we're going to end today's program, folks. Where are we at now? Okay, an hour 20. So I think this is a 13-minute monologue. Please listen to it, folks, for your own good. Whatever it was that you were planning to do with the next 15 minutes of your life, if you were going to go back and listen to what Roseanne Barr had to say or something like that, just put it off. Just put it off and listen to what Tucker Carlson has to say here, because it really is, at the end of all of this, folks, it's for your own good. It's for our own good. So that's it for today's program, folks. I appreciate you. I appreciate your patience with this. I appreciate your kind words. Those of you who are interested in helping out with this humble little informational endeavor, can do so at the link that is provided with the program. And again, folks, I offer this this monologue on the part of Tucker Carlson as a way of patting that very small handful of people who stood with us, stood by us for the last 7 years, and who did not allow their concentration to wander off into what I consider to be areas of silliness, and who kept the faith, who kept the narrative focused, and who just basically stayed the course and said, no, the problem that we have here, the reason that they're out to destroy Trump, is because he intends to bring about an end to these wars for Israel that began on 9/11. So with that in mind, folks, I will see you next week. We'll all get together next week, God willing. Until then, stay safe, stay sharp, and let's all pray for a miracle.
Hey, it's Tucker Carlson. The Biden administration arrested Donald Trump this afternoon. They had him arraigned and fingerprinted in a Miami courthouse, like the accused felon he now technically is. These were the first steps in a process that is designed to put Donald Trump behind bars for the rest of his life. Cable news carried every moment of it live. It's unprecedented, they told us, with what looked like shock. But they weren't shocked. They knew this was coming. Everyone who's paid attention knew it was. What just happened was always going to happen. It's been inevitable since February 16th, 2016. That's the day Donald Trump made a blood enemy of the largest and most powerful organization in human history, which would be the federal government. Despite what you may remember, it wasn't anything that Trump had said about immigration or trade with China or rapists from Mexico. Those are the stories that dominated the headlines that year. Trump's a racist, they scream. Stop him! But inside Washington, that was just noise. None of it really rated. Identity politics doesn't mean much to permanent Washington. What matters, then and now, is foreign policy. The invasions and occupations and proxy wars. The decisions that determine which global populations will thrive and which will die. The policies that come with trillion-dollar price tags. The ones that, over time, have made the counties around D.C. the richest suburbs in the world. In Washington, that's what actually matters. And it's obvious when you look carefully. When there's a debate about anything else, for example, the debt ceiling, both sides take their assigned positions and they start yelling. But when Congress decides to start a war, no matter how foolish or counterproductive or obviously disconnected from America's core interests that war may be, when that happens, the leaders of both parties automatically jump behind it like circus clowns. And then they stay there, sometimes for decades. They defend that war relentlessly against all evidence until somebody finally rings the all-clear bell and they can begin to admit that actually, maybe it wasn't such a great idea. We meant well, but it just didn't work out. The good news is we've learned a lot of important lessons. In the end, they usually do say something like that, but only after emotions have cooled and the damning details have begun to fade from collective memory. It's an apology that's not actually an apology, much less repentance, and it's years too late to matter in any case. But until then, that's all you're getting. Until then, no dissent is allowed. That's the first rule of Washington. But somehow, Trump didn't bother to follow it. He is from out of town, so maybe he didn't know it was a rule, or maybe he just didn't care. Either way, 7.5 years later, we can point to the precise moment that permanent Washington decided to send Donald Trump to prison. Here it is. It's from the Republican candidates debate in Greenville, South Carolina.
We should have never been in Iraq. We have destabilized the Middle East. They lied.
Okay.
They said there were weapons of mass destruction. There were none, and they knew there were none. There were no weapons of mass destruction.
Okay. All right. Go.
We should never have been in Iraq, Trump said. We destabilized the Middle East. Now, by the time Trump said that, a lot of Republican primary voters were starting to reach the same conclusion. How could they not? But it was the next line that doomed Trump to today's arrest. They lied, he said. There were no weapons of mass destruction, and they knew there were none. Now, when he said that, a few in the crowd booed. Most just sat there in silence, stunned. Can he say that? Well, he said it anyway. And by saying that, he sealed his fate. That was the one thing you were not allowed to say, because it implicated too many people on both sides, which on this topic is really just one side. Hillary Clinton was guilty of it, but so was Paul Ryan. All of them were guilty. They all knew. They all lied. And to a person, they hated Donald Trump for exposing them. After that, it was pretty clear that even if he did get elected president, Trump was going to have a very hard time controlling the federal government he was supposed to be in charge of. Most of permanent Washington decided that thwarting Trump was the single most important mission in their lives. Everything depended on it. Many of them said so publicly. But others didn't say so publicly. In fact, the stealthier ones took another path. They ran toward Trump, not away from him. They sucked up to him. They ingratiated themselves with the man they intuitively understood was susceptible to flattery, which Trump is. And they did this in order to subvert his new administration from the inside. There were a number of these, and you could spot them immediately. They were flatterers. Invariably, the ones who flattered Trump the most hated him the most and disagreed the most strongly with his views. You saw them in the hallways of the White House and at press conferences. They were there slobbering over their boss with elaborate self-abasement, as if they were addressing a monarch or a god. It was a scene from the Ottoman court. It was filthy and decadent, and it was false. Mike Pence, Nikki Haley, Mike Pompeo, Lindsey Graham in the Congress, they all called Trump a visionary genius up until the moment he lost power. And then they unsheathed their real agenda, as always the neocon war agenda, and they piled on with maximum force. Here's Mike Pompeo, for example, on Fox News this morning.
President Trump had classified documents where he shouldn't have had them. And then when given the opportunity to return them, he chose not to do that for whatever reason. When somebody identifies that, you got to turn them in. And so that's inconsistent with protecting America's soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines. And if the allegations are true, some of these were pretty serious, important documents. And so that's wrong.
May future historians hoping to unlock the mysteries of late Empire Washington study that clip, because it will reveal everything. That very same Mike Pompeo, the one who's sneering at Donald Trump on TV this morning, that guy served Donald Trump as both CIA director and as Secretary of State. Those are the two most powerful jobs in the federal government. And as he worked in those jobs, Pompeo promised, in fact, he swore, to support the president's agenda. Why? Because that's the way a democracy works. You vote for a candidate in the belief that his appointees will carry out the policies that you voted for. It's not about the president, it's about you, the voter. But Pompeo didn't do that. He didn't even try to do that. In fact, he undermined Trump's often stated commitment to peace and non-intervention abroad at every turn. His every waking hour was devoted to fomenting war in some faraway foreign country or other. Iran, Syria, Russia, North Korea, the list goes on. But rather than telling Trump that he disagreed with his ideas, as a man would, Pompeo toadied up to Trump, a man he despised, in the oiliest, most over-the-top way imaginable. Ask anyone who worked in that White House at the time. Who is the appointee most likely to tell Donald Trump on a daily basis that he was handsome, virile, sleek, and powerful? Mike Pompeo. That will be the consensus answer. Those of us who saw firsthand Pompeo's relentless kowtowing we'll never forget it. It was indelibly repulsive. No one with self-respect could do something like that. But Mike Pompeo did it effortlessly, with relish and verve. Now, this same person is telling Fox News viewers that he fears for the safety of our military, our soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines, in the approved phrase, because Donald Trump took some classified documents home and didn't immediately return them to the National Archives? What a lie that is. Mike Pompeo knows that's a lie. He spent his entire life in Washington. Washington is a city where internal memos about Labor Day are classified because everything is classified. Your government has classified more than a billion federal documents, most of them boring and pointless and a danger to no one, and locked them away in secret where you can't see them because you may be an American citizen, but not really, and therefore you don't have the necessary clearances to know what's going on. And by the way, none of this is done in order to make America safer, any more than COVID restrictions were designed to keep you healthy. No, it's a caste system. That's the point. And you're the untouchable in this hierarchy. Mike Pompeo knows that. Everybody who works in Washington knows that. How many secret documents do you think Dick Cheney took home with him while he was running the Iraq War? How many did his wife read? She never had a clearance. We'll never know the answer because there is no chance Dick Cheney will ever be investigated or his staffers will be told to wear wires in his presence. He will never be indicted for this. Of course not. Dick Cheney is a neocon. Donald Trump is not. Dick Cheney supports war with Russia. Trump does not. That's the difference. The rest is just a distraction. The prosecution of Donald Trump is transparently political. He's literally Joe Biden's main political opponent. He's polling over 60% among Republican voters right now. So Joe Biden is doing what no president has ever dared to do. He's using law enforcement to lock up his chief rival. That's happening right now. Anyone who denies it's happening is lying to you. But actually, it's worse than that. Trump's prosecution isn't just political, it's ideological. Nobody with Trump's views is allowed to have power in this country. Criticize our wars and you're disqualified. If you keep it up, we'll send you to prison. That's the message Washington is sending. Not just the Democratic Party is sending, but both parties are sending. Like so many Republicans, for example, the supposedly conservative governor of Texas, Greg Abbott, spent yesterday totally ignoring the destruction of the American justice system. Instead, he signed a highly important bill called the Crown Act, which, according to the celebratory tweet Abbott sent commemorating it, will, quote, prohibit discrimination based on textures and hairstyles historically associated with race. In other words, in Texas, cornrows are now protected by law. Having unapproved views about Ukraine is not. That's fine with most elected Republicans. They find Trump tiresome and embarrassing. Their donors hate him. They will not be sad if he dies in jail. But what about voters? What are they learning from this spectacle? Well, mostly they're learning that they have no power at all because nobody cares about them. But they already knew that. Unlike so many of our elected leaders, they have been to America recently. They know what it looks like. Have you seen it? If you've got a few days this summer, find out. Take a road trip and see for yourself. Drive 500 miles in any direction and then come home. How are things looking? Well, they should look great. The federal government spent $6.5 trillion last year. That's more than any government has ever spent, ever. So at the very least, you would expect pristine public roads. Oh, no. That's not what you see when you drive around this country. There are potholes and Jersey barriers everywhere. Looks like Tegucigalpa before the Chinese decided to rebuild the infrastructure of Honduras. We don't have China buying our roads. So they're falling apart. You'd think the people you would pass on your road trip would look happy and prosperous. Again, this is a very rich country. But a lot of them don't. Quite a few appear to be strung out on drugs. You see them shuffling by shuttered storefronts in small towns. And you wonder, as you see all of this, where did all the money go? It's certainly not here. Well, it's in Washington. It's in Fairfax and Loudoun counties and in leafy, perfectly manicured Northwest D.C. And of course, a huge chunk of it went to Ukraine, to Zelensky and his friends. Not because you voted for that. You didn't vote to give it to them. You never would. But because Joe Biden and his many allies, from Chuck Schumer to Mitch McConnell to Paul Ryan and every single news anchor on all of television, all of them believe that Ukraine, its borders, its future, its infrastructure are all more important than the town that you live in. They sincerely think that, and it's obvious. Everyone in power thinks that, except for Donald Trump. Whatever else you say about him, Trump is the one guy with an actual shot at becoming president who dissents from Washington's long-standing pointless war agenda. And for that one fact, they're trying to take Trump out before you can vote for him. And that should upset you more than anything that's happened in American politics in your lifetime. Even if you don't plan to vote for Donald Trump, even if you would die before voting for Donald Trump, which is your right, and a lot of good people feel that way, even still, the destruction of our democracy, which is the right of voters to support any candidate they want, even candidates who don't want war with Russia, the destruction of that should keep you up at night. Yes, Donald Trump is a flawed man, but his sins are minor compared to those of his persecutors. In this life, we don't get to choose our martyrs. We can only choose our principles, and America's are at stake.